Hello, and welcome to that Eurovision podcast, Eurovision with a slice of life. My name is Rory, and I'm doing pretty well today. I'm currently eating some Blackpool Rock, so I'm kind of just snacking on that, watching the sun go by, and yeah, ready to get into this episode. So, joining us?
Jazzy, not done too much today. I've just had my lunch, so I'm feeling quite fulfilled right now and happy and just really, like, warm inside because I'm full. And I'm really excited to get into this topic today because it's a topic I have quite a few opinions on.
Hi, it's Rosie. I'm doing okay today. I've been having a bit of a fatigue flare over the past few days, and you could kind of tell when I woke up at 10 o'clock this morning and had a shower and ate breakfast and then lay down on the sofa to watch Come Dine With Me, and then suddenly it's 1:45. So I've just had a nap for most of today, which could be worse.
You could have had worse things to do, to be fair, so that's alright.
Exactly. And I'm supposed to be preparing my lecture for Thursday, but meh.
Who cares? It's fine. You don't need that. Who needs to work?
Exactly.
Oh god, Tim here. Sunday is now a chill day, and I've literally just woken up an hour ago, so, yeah.
How are you all such late risers? Genuinely, what the hell?
I woke up at 9.
Okay, that's...
I won't say I got up, but I woke up at 9.
That's fine. If you're waking up at a reasonable time, that's fine. It's when you get up at, like, you know, 1:45, looking at you, Rosie.
Get up, I just fell back asleep again.
Inexcusable, okay?
Also, I'm disabled and that's a hate crime.
You do not pull this shit on me, okay? Oh dear. But yeah, in this episode, we are going to be talking about Portugal. Now, Portugal is pretty much a staple in the contest. They've pretty much participated every single year since 1964, with a couple of exceptions, but we'll get into them a little bit later. They've managed to win the competition only once, in 2017, with Salvador Sobral and Amar Pelos Dois. And before that, their most successful place was in 1996 with Lucia Moniz, and with O Meu Coração Não Tem Cor. I really hope I said that properly. Forgive me for my poor Portuguese. But yeah,
your Portuguese.
Okay. Yes, my Portuguese. Honestly, this podcast is just descending into nothing but puns at this point. And honestly, I mean, are we here for it? Who knows?
But I think our audience is.
Yeah, that's fine. But yeah, unfortunately, however, Portugal has had a bit of a checkered history at the contest. They've managed to come last a total of 4 times, and you know, we're also on a little bit of a non-qualification streak as well, a grand total of, you know, like 4 times. So just to kind of get things going, who would be some of your favorite Portuguese entries?
I'll kick this off. I feel like my favorite Portuguese entries are kind of like in a block together. Like their 2008 to 2010 era is just amazing. Vania Fernandes with Senhora Dumas. It's quite a dark ballad, and I really like when like the songs have a little bit of darkness to them, and it's very like stereotypically Portuguese, but in a good way, and I really, really enjoy it. And then there's 2009 Flor de Lis, Todas as Ruas do Amar, which is just such a fun, happy song. And it's a song that when I listen to it, I just can't help but smile. And 2010 Filipa Azevedo, Hadas Asim. I just think that's just a pretty song, a song that I really enjoy listening to. And in the final of 2010, where there's a lot of upbeat songs, it just kind of sticks out to me, and like it's quite memorable to me. But I know this, and I don't think it's one of those songs that I don't think is rated enough in the fandom, because it's just a really like nice song that I really enjoy listening to. And like when it comes on in the final, it sticks out to me. So in recent times, I also really liked Elisa's Meadow de Senteur. It was quite like a sad, somber song, but again, it's just like those, I feel like those female Portuguese ballads are just really it for me. I just think they hit me like emotionally, and I just think they're all done beautifully. And yeah.
Yeah, you've definitely picked some good songs there, for sure.
You can tell, like, I have a type when it comes to Portuguese songs.
Oh, I can go for this one. I've got three. But with Portuguese songs, I tend to find is I like the more sad Portuguese songs entries. Or, like, the mid-tempo ones. So, the first one would be, my heartbreak one was in 2018, O Jardim. Oh, that was a heartbreak one and did not deserve last place. I wasn't a fan of it. And then when I got to like Portugal, I kept thinking and I saw the rehearsals and the show. I'm like, wow, it's really deep, like really deep. And like, I listened to it on the way home from Lisbon and I was like, no, don't cry. And ended up like, you know, having posterior vision depression and you're just like, nope, I can't do this again. No, 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 no. Second one was their 2015 entry, Hauma Kulu Separa. Oh, God, I butchered that. Yeah, no, I really like that, but, like, I can see why it didn't qualify. Like, it's a good song, but it didn't have enough oomph. It didn't have anything enough standout. So, like, it's a good pop rock song, but, you know, I can see why Europe didn't favor it, well, both juries and televoters. And one little thing though, I do like a bit of party though, so I will include Susie on there. Like, you know, you haven't lived your Eurovision life until you have done the Susie Shake with Susie in a club in Helsinki.
Oh, see, Susie, if you're listening to this podcast, just, like, hit us up. We need to do some more Susie shaking as soon as possible.
Yeah, like, you know what I really love about her? Like, if you think about it, like, she said this herself. How can she have had such a lasting legacy and she didn't even make the final?
That's very true.
Like, she was saying in Euroclub, like, I don't know how you guys love me so much. I didn't even make the final. And I was just like, no, we love me. Like, you know, it was heartbroken she didn't qualify, but, you know, Valentina was right there. Like, give the poor woman a break.
Yeah. Also, just a quick shout out to her during the Eurovision Home concerts. And her not even having the audacity to, like, you know, pick up an instrument and actually, like, play it while singing Te Quiero Situa. But no, she literally just had to have the words behind her on the back of the screen just to make sure that she could, like, get the words right. Oh, dear.
I feel like most of my picks have already been mentioned. So, I have to say also Senhora do Mar and Todos Astros do Amor, both really beautiful songs. And then, yeah, my other big two from Portugal are their more recent streak, so O Jardim. And I also have to put a shout out because I know this song is very divisive, but I really, really like Telemovace as well. I think it's so interesting. I think it's such a fascinating song from a musical perspective, and it's so unlike anything else I've ever heard before. So, shout out to Conan Osiris, who... the problem is I can't think about him without remembering Rylan and Scott Mills in the commentary calling him a snack.
Oh my god.
And just, I very vividly remember that. One of them was like, oh, this guy is a snack. A snack, you say?
I will say this about Conan. Like, when I met him in Tel Aviv, he is really lovely. Like, we were in, what was it? We were in Herzliya and we were just dancing along and I asked a picture from him. He was really nice. And he's such a character, like, he's really sassy. We were like, we were in the orange carpet. It was like, oh, can we take a picture for our social media? Just like pose, like, you know, just like literally doing like little different types of poses with his outfit. Like, I hope
he
you qualified.
He's such a fun guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He is.
Aw. Well, I mean, definitely Conan. I mean, it's a bit odd though that, you know, that Rylan was calling him a snack when Conan literally looks like Rylan with just longer hair. So it's like, is there some weird, like, thing that they need to go on, like, Jerry Springer for, maybe? Jerry! Yeah, no, genuinely, I mean, most of my favourite entries from Portugal have been said already. Claudia Pascoal, O Jardim, is currently my most played song ever on my Spotify, which has just overtaken Jamala, so... You know, this is a Claudia Pascoal stan podcast right now.
She could step on me.
Oh my god, there it is. I was waiting for that.
Oh, she's so beautiful.
Oh, I mean, genuinely, she's amazing. And like, you need to listen to a few of her other songs outside of the Eurovision context, because if you think O Jardim is, you know, really like strong and everything, listen to another song called Ter Enalter, because I actually think that's a really good one. She kind of plucks a ukulele and just she complains about her boyfriend who does absolutely nothing, and genuinely I love that, so it's great. And then as
well, whole ass mood.
Yeah, and then again, I actually really do like Amar Pelos Deutsch. I think it's actually a really, really good song. It's obviously was such a standout from everything that we'd ever heard, really, in modern day Eurovision. So, you know, that's to have something like that and for it to win so, like, on such a margin, it was amazing, really, to see after all of their struggles to try and win beforehand and it just falling on deaf ears. Again, I really do like Vanya Fernandez, Senhora do Mar, Flor de Lis, Todas as Ruas do Mar. If you've listened to the 2009 episode, you'll know that I love Flor de Lis. I think it's just such a happy, quintessential Portuguese song, and she deserves so much, so much more. Again, I really love Almar Que Não Separa from Leonor Andrade. She was fantastic. Also, just 1996 in general, Lucia Moniz, O Meu Coração Não Tem Cor, I think is so lovely again, because it's somewhat kind of acoustic. I feel like you could, like, with a lot of these Portuguese songs, that you kind of listen to them while just having, you know, like a pastel de nata, kind of sat on, like, against the seaside in Lisbon and just watch the sunset. Like, I feel like that would be how it is. And the fact that, you know, Lucia Moniz has since gone on to become an international film star in Love Actually, I think, you know, shows progression. And, yeah. And then, of course, I also have to give a quick shout out to Paulo de Carvalho, with E Depois de Adeus, from 1974, because of the historical impact of that. For those of you who don't know, the Carnation Revolution in Portugal, which brought down the kind of dictatorship that was going on there, was started from the radio stations playing E Depois de Adeus on radio stations, which was telling, essentially, opposition forces to move in. So it's really interesting to, you know, when you find out about the history of some of these songs that you wouldn't necessarily have heard. But yeah, so obviously a big thing that we've come to realize, I think, take from this section alone, I think, is that when it comes to Portugal, we all are emotional sad boys.
Mm-hmm. So except fun. Tim.
You know, Tim has to, like, dance the whole time, but that's it.
Well, I did say 2 out of 3 is a bit, and 1 is, like, the party maniac in me.
you can do the Susie shake while sobbing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can have both in Eurovision. You can cry to O Jardim, then, you know, do the Susie shake to get a certain tour afterwards.
That's it. That's fine then, yeah. Yeah, O Jardim is just beautiful, and I could go on for so long about it, especially, you know, given the topic of it all, and it's so good, it's so good. Anyway, but yeah, so obviously with Portugal, a big kind of thing that we keep seeing is that pretty much every single year that they've participated, they've always sung in Portuguese. Now, sometimes they have had a couple of little bits in other languages as well. So, for example, you know, 2003, 2005, 2006, they had it in English. And then in 2007, they had little parts in English, French, and Spanish as well. However, they're kind of much the only exceptions to the rule. And every other year that they've participated, it's always been in Portuguese. So why do you think they just refuse to sing in any other language other than their own?
I feel like the impression I get of Portugal when it comes to Eurovision is that they go with the intention of expressing their own culture. They don't go necessarily with the intention to definitely win, because we've seen how long it took them to get there in the first place, and they never changed their tune. They never stopped sending stuff that felt authentic to Portugal. And I feel like they go wanting to show off them as a country. And they are clearly really proud of their language. And I think you see it even looking at Festival de Canção. The songs are almost overwhelmingly in Portuguese there. And it's a place to show off Portuguese songs and also songwriters. There's a really heavy emphasis on the writers of the songs as well as the performers, which I really, really like. And I feel like part of that is showing just how beautiful the Portuguese language can be. And I feel like certainly the songs that I feel are most successful for Portugal and the ones that stand out for me are the ones that are the most interesting with the Portuguese language. Like O Jardim particularly is just so beautiful to me. The lyrics are so sort of evocative and ethereal, and you really get that sense of both nature but also sort of longing and memory and those sorts of things. And I feel like using the language to its advantage is what Portugal like to do.
For sure, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I feel like Portugal are very proud of their language, and you've got to remember at Eurovision they only have 3 minutes to show off whatever they want to show. And I feel like for Portugal, it's like showing their culture. And part of showing their culture is representing it, is sending a song that's in Portuguese and is very much them. I don't think that you could get them to change into English. And in my opinion, I really, really wouldn't want them to, because it wouldn't feel like it was Portugal sending that song, because we're so used to them sending songs in Portuguese now that I feel to send one in English would be almost a bad move, because I would miss the old Portugal, and I'd feel like they're not being themselves if they sent a song in English.
Interesting take.
For me, I kind of agree with what everyone said. It's like, it's their identity. So it's like if Portugal had sent something in another language, it would just feel odd. Just because of the fact that we've conditioned ourselves to just think, oh, Portugal, oh, Portuguese. That's like the trigger point that you know that it's a Portuguese entry, because you know you're not singing in English like the majority of the countries. And the fact that having to sing in their own sending their entries to Eurovision on their own language is kind of like an advantage to them. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, like when you see it in 2017 when Amar Pelos Dois went on in, you can see that it was one of the rare ones that were sung in their national language, which is one of the reasons why it's done so well. It's not just on 2017, like in other years as well, if a country has sent it in their own language, it kind of worked and it got them to the final, kind of like in 2019, like with Albania. UNIDO was the only one that sung in Albanian, everybody else sang in English, and look where it got her. So, you know, having to sing in their own language, it has its advantages, because that means you stick out from the crowd.
That's true, yeah. And like how you guys are saying, like, because Portugal is so proud of themselves, and because they've sung in Portuguese every single year. We've kind of come to expect them to speak in, to sing in Portuguese. So, for example, when in 2020's Festival de Cancel we had Rebellion by Blasted Mechanism, when that was
Belgium, oh. Rebellion.
Oh. Yeah, genuinely, that no. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of the song, but it was definitely a standout because it was the first time that I think we had ever really heard a song in Portugal's national selection with no trace of Portuguese in it. So. It did stand out, but obviously, like, once you get to Eurovision itself, then it kind of loses its charm, I guess. But, yeah, just to kind of look at Festival, like, we've kind of spoken a little bit about it already, but there seems to be more of a focus on the songwriters as opposed to the singers. So, is that something that maybe, like, other countries should maybe take notes from, saying, you know, and... In terms of, you know, like, originality and in terms of creativity or that, or do you think that, you know, maybe they should actually focus more on the singer than on the songwriter?
I will say one other country does this. Sweden, Mello.
Oh. Oh. Okay.
Yeah, because, like, you know, they kind of do it to a variation, per se.
Like you think in their intro videos, like, in when I've watched Melfest, like, it definitely seems like there's more emphasis on, like, the producers and the people behind the song rather than the singer themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so, but the thing is, though, they don't do it to an extreme, like, case as Portugal. Like, for the 2020, like, for next, I mean, at the time of recording, they just confirmed their participation for 2021. And it says that there'll be 20 participants, 18 of those will be through invitation, and only 2 will be selected from submission. So that's one extreme way, but then at least it gives, you know, new and upcoming artists to try and showcase their talent, even though if it's just like a small minority.
I'm thinking like other countries that maybe could do this a little bit more. I'm thinking like countries like Italy and Albania, which... I feel very much like Portugal, their national final or whatever isn't necessarily for Eurovision. It's more to, like, showcase, like, Albanian, Italian music. Very much like Portugal is, Festival de Cancel, it is for Eurovision, but it feels more like it's a festival to show off Portuguese music in Portugal, which is fine, but I feel like there's countries like Albania and Italy which could maybe take a leaf from this and maybe give the singers and songwriters some more, like, credit, especially as like Portugal, where national selections are festivals within their own right.
Mm. Okay, yeah, definitely.
I feel like there's definitely a balance to be struck, and there's still... needs to be acknowledgement of how big a role the performer plays in it, because they're the ones that are being the public face of that song. They are the ones that are putting themselves out there for criticism and things like that. And I feel like that's really important to acknowledge. They're the ones that bring the song to life in a way. But I feel like acknowledging the work of the songwriters and the production team is also very, very important. And it's one of the reasons why I love the 2017 postcard so much, because you really see just how broad a team it is that puts these performances together. And you see them all standing there doing that sort of weird mannequin challenge thing in the tunnel, sort of as if they're about to go on stage. And I really loved that. I really liked how, for example, with Ogene's performance, you saw their dad, who did write the song with them in the background, or you saw with Blanche, you saw the two backing singers, which included Suri at the time, and with Emma Pelos-Deutsch, you saw Luisa right next to Salvador, and I really, really liked that acknowledgement of things. So I feel like it's worth acknowledging just how huge a role the singer plays in it. And I feel like to not give due credit to them is ridiculous, but also acknowledging that it's not just them, is also really important. One thing that I'm wondering in terms of particularly Sanremo, and I'm thinking this because I've not seen a huge number of them, but also the songs that I seem to be drawn to tend to be written by the artists themselves. They don't really tend to have a lot of external songwriters and then just singers performing those songs. So I guess it possibly balances that way as well. I know with Festival de Cansao, it's sort of a mixture between singers and songwriters performing their own stuff, or a songwriter producing a song and a singer performing it.
Well, I was going to say that, like, Festival de Cansao is pretty much like the antithesis of everything that we try to go for on this podcast, because, you know, on this podcast, you know, we often talk about, you know, like, authenticity and, you know, having the singer and the song fit each other, because, you know, the singer writes the song and therefore it's a lot more personal and they can do with the song how it's meant to be. Whereas with Festival de Cansao, they pick the songwriters first and then the songwriters go out and find the singer that best suits that song. So it's kind of the complete opposite of what we go for, but yet it somehow still works, which is kind of strange. But, yeah, and of course, you know, as well we said with 2017, you know, like, we had, like, with the postcards, you know, with Luisa Sobral and Salvador, and you could see that, you know, it wasn't just this one person that goes on stage and then just sings their song and then goes off again. There's, like, so much else that goes on behind it. However, okay, right, the best thing to do is that before we go any further, we have to talk about 2017 and Salvador Sobral and Amanda.
Oh my god!
There's been a lot of tension going on, and do you know what? I think the best thing to do is just to get a little 5-minute bit where everyone who wants to say something about Salvador, either as a person or as a song or anything like that, just let it out now, and then we can just put it to bed, and then we can carry on. Okay.
Okay, right.
Okay.
All right. I will start. okay. The first thing I really want to say is, if you say that Amar Pelas Dois is the worst song in 2017, I personally think you are wrong, because there is absolutely no way it is. And I see a lot of it on my Twitter timeline where it's ranked last, it's the worst song, and I'm like, it really isn't. You just don't like it, or you don't like Salvador. And this is where I'm going to be a little bit controversial. Not liking Salvador is perfectly valid, because some of the opinions that he had were not said in the best way, or should have been kept to himself. I get that people come at me and say, "All right, we have a freedom of speech." Some of the stuff that he said, either after the 2017 final, which to me, I find a little bit shady towards the other artists that were competing in 2017. All the stuff that he said about Netta in 2018, about her song just being rubbish. And that he was really disappointed that things in Eurovision hadn't changed beyond music and fireworks. I just think, and I get his point that not all music is fireworks. I get that point, but he didn't say it in the best way, and it just came across really arrogant and rude, in my opinion. But again, I'm not going to take away from his win. I'm not going to take away from the fact that his song won. It deserved to win, and there you go. It's like it's separating the art from the artist, because although I don't agree with a lot of the things Salvador said or the way he said it, the song is still good. The song still deserved to win.
I'm just going to agree with Jazzy there. Love the song, deserve its win. But as a person, he was just like a great douchebag. Like, I'm not going to detract, because he deserved his win, but let's just say what he said afterwards, plus what he said when you were in Lisbon. Yeah, that's not cool. That's not good. Plus, I will admit this. It was kind of funny when he had to give the trophy to Netta. That was kind of funny. That was just comedic to watch. It's like, music is not fireworks. And it's like, 1 year later, congratulations, Netflix.
And then just walks off the stage. It's like, whoop.
Exactly.
Like, that in a way sort of brings it home to me just how much I feel so kind of off put by the comments that he said, because whatever you think about Netta's song, it has meaning. Music doesn't have to have this dichotomy between being fun and fireworksy and showy and being meaningful. We can have both, and I think Toy is the perfect example of that. It's right. Really interesting from a musical perspective. It layers all of these sounds in really creative sorts of ways, and it has a very serious and powerful message behind it. And getting caught up on the fact that, oh, it's got some chicken noises in it, or it uses a looper, or it has all of these things in, I think is so disrespectful to what Netta created. And I think it just completely goes against even what Salvador himself said. Looking down on music just because it's fun and it's upbeat, because you don't think that it's powerful enough, when actually it's bringing home probably an even more powerful social and political message than you were putting forth, Salvador. And this is not to shit on Amor Pelos Dois, because as much as I don't care for the song, I can recognize that it is objectively a very beautiful and very well-produced piece of music. But not all music has to be like that. And I find it so uncomfortable watching that moment, because Netta got so much shit for the song that she produced. And for it to come from someone who should be a peer to her is so uncomfortable to me. And yeah, I dislike this whole idea that you have to choose between music being fun and music being meaningful. We can have both, and Eurovision has so many examples of both being possible. Moustache, Hatred Mansigra, Alcohol is Free. Songs that have very complex social and political messages behind them, but do them in a way that is fun, that do them in a way that is satirical. Even from the same year, Occidentali's Karma is a really great example of it. And I just find it so frustrating, this narrative that just because your music is fun, it doesn't mean it can't also be serious. Mm. Also, Luisa sang Amor Pelos Dois better.
I mean, That last kind of winning performance between Salvador and Luisa was absolutely amazing. I would have much preferred that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think her voice is beautiful as well.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, okay, you guys have gone quite very hard on him. I'm going to be not as bad. Basically, of course, his comments to do with, oh, you know, Eurovision itself is, like, ridiculous and whatever. Of course, that's going to create this kind of idea of, like, why would you ever have said something like that and then decide to enter the contest anyway? However, I do feel now at this stage in the game, you know, he's been and gone for over 3 years now. And yet there are still people in this fandom who continually choose to take aim at him, and for all of the reasons why he won, and, you know, saying, oh, he, like, kind of taking an Alex Florea approach, saying, oh, he only won because, you know, he was ill at the time, or, oh, he only won because, you know, it was only getting, like, the old people involved or whatever, something like along those lines. Which I think is absolute ridiculous. And if you are one of those people, then I genuinely, like, you just need to change, honestly. Because
it's been 3 years, get over it.
Literally, it's literally been 3 years, get over it, okay? But, like, of course, like, I think the problem is with Salvador is that he's very proud of who he is, and, you know, I wouldn't say arrogant, but, you know, if he feels like he might be, you know, the all-knowing one, I don't think that's how he sees it. I think he's just, you know, he wants to defend against kind of the onslaught, I guess you could say, of factory-made music, which is understandable, because, you know, when you listen to charts nowadays, all it is literally just the same beat on repeat all the time. However, you can't stop telling people what they can and cannot like. And so, you know, I appreciate Amar Falsh Deutsch. I think it's an amazing song. I think, you know, as a singer, I think he's fantastic. I think he's incredibly talented. However, I think he just needs to take it a little bit easier on the opinions. And who knows? I mean, I doubt we'll ever see him back at Eurovision again. If we ever do, then I think that would be a weird miracle. But we'll see how that goes.
We saw him in the Eurovision movie, which, if anything, that is the most fucking fast food film that I've seen this year.
To be fair, that is pretty true. And again, people were getting annoyed at Salvador Sobral because there was this story going on that, oh, they wanted him to be in the song along as well as performing on the top of Edinburgh. But he said, oh, I'll only do it if you pay me more money. That's totally reasonable, because you know, the more time you spend on camera, the more you're going to want to be paid. And then as well as that, I don't even think it would have worked out anyway properly, because that wouldn't necessarily make sense within the storyline of it all, because it was supposed to have been playing as like a homeless person in the movie, but I don't really understand. However, like I said, we just need to get over it. It's just, you know, he's been and gone. He's not going to haunt the contest forever, so people just need to kind of grow up at this point. You know, like, there's worse things going on. But yeah, just to kind of make things a bit lighter, I guess. And just to kind of wrap things up a little bit. What do you think Portugal needs to do to kind of carry on this kind of relative good streak of results with, you know, being in the final? Because, you know, Portugal has kind of been very much hit and miss in terms of its results since the introduction of semi-finals back in 2004. So what can they do in order to kind of get back into the final on a consistent basis?
I don't think they care about doing that. I think they care about sending something that they feel represents Portugal and that is representative of the country. That's literally just exactly what I said, but I finished that sentence wrongly. Whatever we say, they're not gonna care. They're gonna keep doing what they're doing. They're gonna keep sending stuff that they like, that they feel is authentically Portuguese, that shows off their music scene and their culture. And quite honestly, good on them. I love it. Like, I might not like every one of their entries that they send, but keep doing you, Portugal.
Yeah, I'm kind of agreeing with Rosie, where we could say anything, like, we could suggest anything to them, and they will not take a single thing on board, because Portugal are very much them, and they don't care whether it's hit or miss. What they care about is sending something that is quintessentially Portuguese and represents them and their culture. And they care more about showing that off in 3 minutes than how well they do. And I guess it's kind of a good attitude to have. Because it's like, here, we want to show off our country, we want to show off our culture. Winning isn't everything. And I feel like that is a good attitude to have. Like, they're showing off the best of what they've got within their culture. And they don't really care whether it wins or not. I think that's a good attitude to have.
I have nothing to add. Like, I kind of agree with all the points. I'm just saying that they're not going to care. They're happy with what they're doing. It's their money anyways. And if they still think that not qualifying is a success, then, you know, as long as they're still in the competition, that's all that matters.
However they would like to send Barbara Tinoco at some point, I would be very happy with that, because Passepartout is such a great, I'm dating my boyfriend, I'm dumping my boyfriend because he's not hipster enough for me song, and I love it.
Why are we trying to be too cool here? I don't get why. But yeah, no, myself personally, I think like how we said, you know, Portugal is just going to do whatever the hell it wants to. As well, we've seen the music scene in Portugal is just so different to anything that we've really sort of seen either in Europe or just kind of, you know, in Eurovision, you know. So for them, just like, I would just want them to kind of carry on doing what they're doing, because, you know, if it works best for them, then that would be fantastic. But, you know, don't feel like a need to change in order to do better results, because Portugal, now that they've had a taste of winning, I think now they might be like, okay, now that we've had that, we can just be happy that we've just shown up. However, saying that, RTP, if you can offer some clues as to why you decide to withdraw every single time Sweden hosts, I would love to know. I would love to know. Because, you know, 2000, 2013, 2016, there was no Portugal. No Portugal at all. And it's not that there wasn't enough money or anything that was going on, especially within 2016. However, I mean, it seems to have worked for them, because, you know, the last participation they had before 2017 was Leonor Andrade, who hadn't qualified for them. And then the next thing, oh, they win. So, you know, they obviously know what they're doing. So we'll see. But yeah, do we have any sort of final points on Portugal just before we start to wrap things up?
Please don't friggin' withdraw every time Sweden hosts the competition. Thank you very much.
No, we refuse to.
I mean, if Sweden win and they withdraw again, I'm just going to assume that RTP hates Sweden.
This is where we need to do some proper investigative journalism here into the inner workings of RTP.
Like, you can't just, like, say that, oh, I can't go to 2013 because of financial restrictions. And I'm just like, and then on 2014, you go to Denmark, which is more expensive. And be like, oh, actually, we've got the money. I'm like,
and then in 2016, Sweden win. No, yeah, we're not going.
We can't afford it.
Vienna was pretty expensive as well.
Yeah. But then they saved money again in Ukraine. So I guess it's like, you know, then we're making the money go further.
Yeah.
Portugal, you would like to win again, please do, because I would really like to visit your beautiful country, and I think you are great hosts.
Oh yeah, true. Oh my god, I'll tell you this, I was in Lisbon for a week, I bought £300 with me, and I don't think I used all of it, but like, it's pocket money, I'm in pocket money, I don't think I used all of it, because everything was just so cheap.
I love that. Honestly.
Yeah.
Can we have a TEP holiday to Lisbon at some point? Because I'm down.
Yeah,
for that.
And
yes.
And also, I kept taking Ubers everywhere. That's how cheap it was.
Wow.
Okay.
And you still didn't use the £300.
Yeah, I'm still quite sure, because like, I took metro in some, like, I took metro some days, and I took metro most days, and especially when I went home, because, you know, suitcases galore.
Oh my god, that's amazing. Yeah, I'm totally
like, because here in the UK, like, one metro trip can be £300.
That's pretty true.
Well, yeah.
Especially where Tim lives, you know, like. Nah. But yeah, that pretty much takes us to the end of this episode of That Eurovision Podcast. I'd really like to thank Jazzy, Rosie and Tim just for straddling our way down to Lisbon and getting ourselves a pastel de nata and, you know, having a good time with some port wine. It sounds like a great old time. But yeah, so in the meantime, please do continue to follow us on all of our social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at That Euro Podcast. We're also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well, so please do continue to follow us there so you always get notified for whenever a new episode comes out. In the next couple of weeks, we'll be kind of throwing a few different curveballs your way for sure, I think. Keep watch this space, because we have a good few surprises up our sleeves for you, so you know you don't want to be missing out, that's for sure. So shall we all say goodbye?
Bye.
Bye.